Guys, thank you very much for being here. We'll try to keep it as informal as possible, so interrupt as many times as you want. If I like your question, I'm going to answer. If not, I'm going to say no. So you can try. I'm going to decide. We have a pointer? Yeah, that's the best pointer we can have. So thank you very much for coming here. So when we thought about this session, we thought about going from easy to more complex. I'm the easy guy, so I'm going to try to go for why does CGD make patients sick and how does CGD present. So please interrupt me as many times as you want. So I told you I was going to go simple. We all have an expertise here. So you have the expertise of being a patient. You have the expertise of being doctors. And you teach us about primary immunodeficiencies. So this is a definition that I like about PIDs because it actually kind of covers all the aspects about PIDs. So when we are talking about primary immunodeficiencies, so we are talking about disorders that there are a diverse group of illnesses that are the result of one or more abnormalities in the immune system increase susceptibility to infection. The primary immunodeficiencies are genetic disorders with characteristic inheritance patterns. So some of you might think that this is a new idea, that perhaps Marsha Ball came up with that idea in 1982, but actually it's not. This is a pretty old concept. Actually, the first guy that thought that people were more susceptible to infection, it was Abubakar Mohammed bin Zakaria. Try to repeat with me. Abubakar Mohammed bin Zakaria. Okay, for friends, Razi or Razen. This guy, 1,000 years ago, he said, you know what? Not everybody going to get infected with what they want. They're going to get infected with what they can. Depending, or in his case, so he used a very basic approach. He said, if you are chubby, and you're light-skinned, you're more susceptible to infections than you're skinny and dark-skinned. And actually, this is a concept 1,000 years ago. But I know somebody in the room, but he thinks that he was the one that thought about that first. Do you recognize him? Actually, at some point, he even grew a beard to look like Racine. So I know that he did it for that reason. So, but now, moving forward. So, primary immunodeficiencies. We know that people believe that they are very common diseases. Some others believe that they are not that common. The incidence is not that clear. Some people claim that they are 1 every 1,200. Some others claim there's 1 every 20,000. Probably it's between the middle of those numbers. More males are affected than females. And then one of the ways that we classify the PIDs is based on which compartment of the immune system is affected. So here you have the humoral compartment, that they're the B cells, or they're bioproducts, that they're the immunoglobulins or the antibodies, and this is the most common one. Combined, when you have T and B immune deficiencies, all together they're kind of 80% of the PIDs, and then we have all the others, and here are the ones that we are going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about CGD. They say phagocyte cell disorder. When we are talking about PID in general, we are talking that most of them, they share kind of the same manifestations. And when somebody gets a PID, usually gets a triad. So it's not just susceptibility to infections that kind of is the hallmark of PIDs. They also have autoimmune or inflammatory or auto-inflammatory diseases. And some of them, they have neoplasias. And it makes some sense. Whenever our immune system doesn't work, we don't know how to fight the outside, so we get a lot of infections. And sometimes our immune system also gets confused, so start to attack ourselves. That's the autoimmunity. And then the immune system has another function. It's called the immune surveillance of cancer. So some patients with T-cell defects and other defects, they do have susceptibility to cancer. So PIDs is usually a very complex syndrome because you can get the three of them. Not all PIDs get all of them, and we'll be talking about which are the ones that are more prevalent in CGD. So then symptoms, they start early in life for most of them because, as we said, they are genetic disorders. So we are born with them, and many of them start pretty early. Some other start later. So 10 to 15 to 20% of PIDs, now we know that they're going to start later. You carry them since you are born, but it's going to take 20, 30, 40 years before it manifests. So infections is kind of the hallmark, as we discuss, about PIDs. And again, as Abubakar Mohammed bin Zakaria said, or Steve, so not everybody gets the infections that they want, they gain the infections that they can. And that depends on which part of the immune system is the one that's not working fine. Each compartment of the immune system help us to neutralize different type of organisms. For example, T cells, they are kind of, they do everything. They help us to control bacteria, virus, parasitic, fungal, and mycobacterial infections. But here, NK cells, they're only good in order to control viral infections. So that it means is depending on the type of infections that you get, which is going to be the compartment of the immune system that we will suspect is affected and is giving you some susceptibility to infections. As we said, PIDs are genetic disorders. And now going to CGD, this is what CGD is. CGD is a genetic disorder. Here you have a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 genes mapping to 5 different chromosomes coding for 5 different proteins that they give the same syndrome. CGD is a disease with genetic heterogeneity. What it means, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 genes and one disease. Most of the times they are indistinguishable. So 5 genes, one disease, this is what we call genetic heterogeneity. Also, here you can see that 4 of them, they have an AR. This is not because I'm from Argentina. AR means something different. It means, oh, thank you. AR means autosomal recessive. What it means? We are made by 2 halves. Half information from mom, half information from dad. Whenever people have CYBA, NCF1, 2, or 4, it means that both copies, the maternal allele and the paternal allele, are both mutated, and both of them carry a disease that the patient manifests. So this is the case with the autosomal recessive forms of CGD. Here is not extra large. This is X-linked. And this is the most common form of CGD, and this is just mapped to the X chromosome. Here, males, we are at some selective disadvantage. We only have just one X chromosome. If that, that chromosome is affected, we don't have any backup copy. Females, they have 2 copies, so they have one or another. So that's why this one is manifesting males. Here is the proportion of CGD patients that they do carry the different type of genetic forms. You can see that some of them are more prevalent than others. So X-linked CGD is highly prevalent in Western countries. If I go to talk to Saudi Arabia or to Iran, so they would say, you are wrong, because here the most common forms are the autosomal recessive, and it's because the high rate of consanguinity. So I told you, you need 2 copies, and if those 2 copies are from relatives, there's a lot of consanguinity in the Middle East, so there the distribution of CGD is completely different than the ones that we have here. If you go to Korea, they will have a lot of these ones. So yes, Western countries, we follow this rule, but different countries, they have different genetic backgrounds, and they can have a different kind of distribution. So 5 genes, 5 different chromosomes, 5 different proteins. So why these 5 genes that they map to completely different chromosomes, 1, 7, 16, 22, X, they are just built or make that you have a single disease? And the point is that all those genes map to different proteins, GP91, P22, P40, P47, P67, that all together they make the NADPH oxidase system. So that's why 5 different genes that look not to be related at all, they make together this complex that is the one that is affected in patients with CGD. So now let's go geographically, where that happens. I already show you here a membrane, here's the cytosol, but where that does happen? So that happens inside the neutrophils or the monocytes. So those are the cells that they carry these proteins. There's in other cells too. B cells also have it, T cells also have them, but actually the main cells, that they're the ones that they're responsible to carry the NADPH oxidase, and what it does are phagocyte cells, neutrophils and monocytes. And here you can see, we have here the nucleus, and when here the primary granules, that they have enzymes that help us to clear infections, and here we have the secondary granules, that they carry the cytochrome B558 that carry 2 of the proteins from the NADPH oxidase system. So how does it work in physiologically, or whenever these cells get activated? So follow me here. So this is a phagocyte, and here you have something, a phagosome that engulfs bacteria or fungi. What happens when those cells get activated? So here you have the whole system, and the whole system, what it does, it just donates two electrons to oxygen, and then makes a compound that's called superoxide. Superoxide is good. It might kill cells, but it's not very stable. So we have to go very fast to make something more stable. So through spontaneously or through superoxide dismutase, we generate hydrogen peroxide. Again, hydrogen peroxide is good, but it's not the most, the strongest way of killing microorganisms. So we can degrade that, or we can produce bleach. And then bleach is the one, the same bleach that you use to clean the toilet is the one that we produce. And actually, this bleach that is exactly the same that chloros produce, without paying any royalties to nature, so is the one that we generate in our white blood cells in order to kill fungi and bacteria. So this is how it works. And this is how genetically happens CGD, and this is how biologically happens. So going back, just trying to summarize whatever we have discussed so far, we know that the NADPH oxidase is mainly expressed in phagocyte cells. So now you can imagine which are the type of infections that patients with CGD have. It's not by chance that they have bacterial and fungal infections, and some of them have mycobacterial. They do have those diseases, not because they attended my talk, that I like that you are here, because these are the cells that they are affected, and this is the activity that these cells can produce. They are not good at killing viral infections. It's not that patients with CGD cannot get them. They're kind of standard in terms of their susceptibility to viral infections, but they're susceptible or highly susceptible to certain type of bacterial, fungal, and mycobacterial infections. But I told you, whenever you have a patient that do have a PID, it's not the nicest combo possible. It's not just the susceptibility to infections, it's the autoimmunity or immune dysregulation plus the neoplasia. In patients with CGD, neoplasia is not higher than in the general population. But yes, they do have a lot of autoinflammation or autoimmunity. The mechanisms by or why they have autoinflammation is not, they're not that clear, or they're not as clear as the ones that they have infections. But we do know that they produce abnormal reactive oxygen species, so they increase the production of cytokines. Cytokines are kind of the messengers between immune cells. So in the endocrine system, we call them hormones. In the immune system, we call them cytokines. So they increase, bringing more immunological cells. Those cells, they don't usually die as they should die, and they start producing a lot of cytokines that they try to recruit more cells, and they produce granuloma. So we don't know exactly, that's why it's full of question marks, why that happens. But we do know that patients with CGD, is not that they have just increased susceptibility to infections, they have increased granuloma formations, autoimmunity, and immune dysregulation. And we'll be talking about that later during our session. So actually, CGD is kind of a yin-yang thing. So you have here a patient with CGD that have a lot of infections, and here we describe the type of infections, and here we describe which are the manifestations. I know you cannot read. Not, I cannot read even from here. I apologize for that. But I couldn't get a better picture. So, but the thing I can read for you. No, not even from here. So, but you know, patients with CGD, they get both. They will get infections, and they will get immune dysregulation. And always, whenever we have a patient and they have a fever, we have to think about both of them. It's not always antibiotics. Sometimes it's going to be antibiotics, and sometimes it's going to be steroids, and sometimes it's going to be both of them, because we know that they have, you have this problem, and we have to combine the two approaches. So we know why our patients, they do have infections, and I will show you how those infections present in our patients. So that's the other one. We know how they have autoimmunity. And here is kind of a description of which type of infections our patients have. So most, and this is a series from the US, so it really represents whatever is happening among us here. So most of our patients, they do have infection. I would say that 99.9% of our patients, they're just very few, but we know them, that they have CGD and they have no or very little number of infections. But patients with CGD, they will get a lot of infections. And the big three, the most common presentation, the most common infections, are going to be pneumonia, abscesses, and adenitis. Yes, they have osteomyelitis, bacteremia, and fungemia. That means that the bacteria travel through the blood or fungi travel through the blood. Cellulitis, there's inflammation or infection of the skin, meningitis, brain, and other infections. But these are the big three. So most of our patients are going to get several of those infections, especially if we cannot prevent them. And this is how they look. So they can look as severe like that. This is a patient that aspirated fungi because it was mulching. Mulching is not a good thing for CGD patients. So I don't know who likes mulching, so give it to somebody else. Please don't mulch because that could happen. But that could be seen in an X-ray. But look at this. This is another CGD patient that presented almost without clinical symptoms, because some of you are going to present just to a control who said, okay, we need to do a CT scan. I said, why a CT scan? I feel great. Because we know that X-rays, they are not always sensitive enough. And there are small things that will only show by CT scan. There are going to be another things that will make us suspect that you may be infected, like sedimentation rate or CRP, that usually elevated even you feel well. But one of the things that happens with patients with CGD is that they don't always feel bad whenever they have an infection. Oh, sorry, it was me. So here's the thing. So CT scan will do many, because we know that there are things we will not see in X-rays. So then I told you that some patients with CGD, they can present also with mycobacterial infections. And this was a patient with a mycobacterial infection. But here we have an advantage. The rest of the world, they use a vaccine that's called BCG that we don't use here in the U.S. So those patients, when they are born, we put under their skin 3.2 million of mycobacteria. 3.2 million, a lot of them. So what happened to those patients? What happened to my patient? Look here. Here you see something white. This is calcification because this patient was vaccinated and then developed BCGitis. So we do know, and we have here the advantage not to test our patient with the BCG vaccine, because this is what can happen. So because our patients, our CGD patients outside the US, they get BCG vaccine, we have a different kind of clinical manifestations. So for example, I told you do not mulch, but you didn't hear me tell you do not drink mate, because mate has as much aspergillus as mulch. So if anybody's you from South America, you know what I'm talking about. Somebody from South America? Okay, I'm the only one mate drinker. So okay, oh, there's someone. Do you drink mate? Okay, don't drink anymore. Oh yeah, if you're a CGD patient, you can do it. But you know, mate has a lot of aspergillus. It's kind of more aspergillus than rather than mate.
And it tastes like it.
It tastes like shit. Sorry, it tastes horrible. But I like it. So, abscesses. I know that Dr. Heller is going to be talking about the GI tract. I'm going to talk about an organ, a solid organ, the GI tract. So sometimes, so infections are not in the lung, they're in the liver. And you can see here this small shadow. So this is an abscess in the liver. So this is pretty common. Patients with CGD, up to one third, will have at some point of their life a liver abscess. And actually, we have to do a different type of approach that Dr. Holland is going to talk later, because those are solid. They look like baseball balls. They are not empty. So usually when patients get liver abscess, we drain them. When we try to drain that, nothing comes up because it's like glue. So we have to take different approaches that he will talk about later. So then adenitis. That's the other thing I was telling about the big three, which are the most common infections. How does CGD present? So here you have a typical adenitis, and here you have three different interesting things about this patient. So what do you think is interesting about this patient? He's female. What do you think is interesting?
I don't know.
He's a female.
Okay.
No, wrong. No, yeah. She's a female. She's a female, but she has the X-linked form because she did something wrong with herself. She inactivated all the good ones, and she got active all the ones that they are sick. So she behaves as a male in terms of X chromosome activation. So we can see females that they have the X-linked form of CGD. And here, you can guess that there's a scar because she behaved as a male with X-linked form. And then she also had manifestations that are typical from female carriers, discoid lupus. So here we have three things that they are not the most common things. Females carrying the X-linked form, behaving as CGD, and also having the manifestation that we typically see just in the carriers. So this is kind of a weird, weird, weird situation, but we have to be used to that too. Other things that we use in order to think about CGD. So we do profiling. So whenever we hear about particular microorganism, we know that we have to think about CGD. So staph, okay, everybody can have a staph infection, but nocardia, serratia marcescens, chromobacterium violations, granulobacter betadensis, so they have a positive correlation value of kind of 100%. If you hear somebody that has granulobacter betadensis described at the NIH by Dr. Holland in CGD patients, guess which patients get this microorganism. It's just CGD. If you think about chromobacterium violation, you know, 99% of the patients that get microorganisms, they have CGD. Similar things happen with serratia marcescens. No cardia, there are patients that they can be no CGD and still get it. But whenever we hear that patients get these kind of infections, we know that it's a highly chance that those patients have CGD. Burkholderia sepatia, patient with cystic fibrosis have it, but it's very prevalent in patients with CGD. Aspergillus, patients with neutropenia, hyper-IgE, but also CGD. So those are the ones that we profile. Whenever we get a consult and somebody tells us, we have a patient that has aspergillus, think about CGD, because this is something that you have to do. Mycobacteria, they're different diseases, but we do profiling. And we do profiling not just with the microorganisms. Also, we do profiling with the localization of the infections. Anybody can have a pneumonia, but osteomyelitis, we know that almost 25% of patients with CGD will have osteomyelitis. So if you have osteomyelitis due to staph or due to aspergillus or serratia, we know that it's very likely that you have CGD. So we use profiling. Yeah, that's not right, but we do it because it helps us to diagnose these patients. Lymph nodes that they have adenitis, also another hallmark of patients with CGD. So we say that our patients not only have infections, they have autoinflammation or immune dysregulation, not that clearly understood as the infectious disease predisposition factors. But here is how they present. So here, we gave contrast to the patient, but it didn't go through the stomach. Why? Because they had an obstruction here. This hyperinflammation obstructed the GI tract and doesn't allow the food to go through. So this is not infectious, this inflammation, this granuloma formation because of immune dysregulation. It can happen in the GI tract, and Dr. Heller is going to talk about that after me, but also it could happen in the urinary tract. That inflammation can happen in the solid viscera, but also in the hollow viscera. And here you have a patient that had a fistula, had a Crohn-like disease, but also have a fistula because of the inflammation of the bladder. So again, CGD comes in two flavors, and usually they're mixed together. Susceptibility to infections, immune dysregulation, and granuloma formation. So one more thing that we see among patients with CGD, they usually don't heal well. We don't know exactly why, but whenever they have surgery, they take a lot of time in order to close the wounds. We know what to do. We know that there is some medication that might help them to close faster, but this is something that's also characteristic, and perhaps some of you have experienced it, that whenever you have surgery, so wounds do not heal fast. So now, just to conclude, let me summarize what we discussed. I was asked to talk about two things. Why does CGD make you sick, and how does CGD present? And I guess that we came up with a couple of answers. So why? Because CGD is a genetically heterogeneous disease caused by defects in NADPH oxidase. So it's a genetic disorder that affects the NADPH oxidase, and these, down the way, affect the respiratory burst of the generation of reactive oxygen species. How it's characterized, how it does present, it presents usually with recurrent infections that they are bacterial and fungal. Why? Because NADPH oxidase is expressed in phagocytes, and those are neutrophils and monocytes, and those cells help us to control bacteria and fungi. That's why CGD have these kind of infections. It's not just because by chance. It's because of their genetic trait, it's because of the biology, it's because of the pathophysiology. And also, these patients have abnormal granuloma formation and immune dysregulation. So, I think that I answered those questions. I think so. So I want just to thank you, our patients, our families, their families, our students and colleagues, because actually it's a constant challenge. So you are teaching us and you are challenging us to learn more, try to give back to the community. So thank you very much. Mm-hmm.